Two guests for you now over the next couple hours as we talk about disclosure. Stephen Bassett, you know him, executive director of the Paradigm Research Group and a leading advocate for ending the government-imposed truth embargo regarding extraterrestrial presence in the human race. He is a political activist, lobbyist, and commentator. Here he is, Stephen Bassett on Coast to Coast. Stephen, welcome.
Always good to be with you, George. How are you?
It's going to be a pleasure. Grant Cameron is a Canadian researcher who has researched a major UFO flap in 1975 and 76, as well as the early Canadian government investigation into flying saucers, including the MJ-12 document and its connection to the former president of Penn State University. Grant works now as pushed him to research stories about UFOs surrounding the president of the United States and the White House. Here he is back on Coast to Coast, Grant Cameron. Hello, Grant. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, George. Pleasure
My
to be
pleasure.
On.
Stephen, tell me a little bit about the relationship with Grant Cameron. Some exciting news for both of you.
Well, certainly I've known Grant for some time, going back well before 2000, and was and been an admirer of him from the beginning. He's one of the most important researchers in the field, having staked out an area of great importance. And as it happens, back in 2003, we came together and made a decision to attempt to publish his work on the U.S. presidents and UFOs, which I think many, if not all of your listeners, are familiar with. And at that time, we had a major publisher, a major agent in New York, working for a pretty top firm, and a book proposal was sent around to virtually every publisher in New York. And it was just turned down, right, 2003. It was disappointment, but the timing was probably not right.
Mm-hmm.
And this is significant because I had wanted from the beginning and felt that this book, it was important that this book be published through a major New York firm and that it be accorded all the appropriate mainstream, how would you say, rites of passage that it deserved, not only the subject matter, but the amount of work that Grant had done. And also because in order to get through to the power structures, that power corridor that exists between New York and Washington, D.C., you need to go that route, right? You need to be published by a major firm. You need to get reviewed. You need to be, if they have a shot at the bestseller list and so forth. And so I wanted to do that, even though the book could have been self-published at any time or done or taken out through a second or third level, third-tier firm. And Grant, my great relief, was willing to go along with this approach and has patiently continued his research for these next 6 years while the opportunity to get this book done right until it came about. And that has, in fact, happened. And we are now signed.
Beautiful.
With a major New York publishing firm, Overlook Press, which is run and founded by legendary publisher Peter Mayer, who was head of Penguin International Division, as well as Avon Books, before he launched Overlook Press. The book will be distributed through Penguin. It's slated to come out in the fall, and we have the full backing of the firm. They're very excited about it, and we're announcing tonight that this work of Grant's will go out by Overlook this year, I think it's going to have significant impact on the events that we're seeing unfolding all around us.
It's dramatic, Stephen. And Grant, let me ask you, how did you, a Canadian researcher and a darn good one, end up specializing in U.S. presidents' involvement with UFOs?
Well, it goes back already to 1975 when I had a number of sightings covering this huge UFO flap that occurred in the province where I live, Manitoba. And so when I first saw the objects that I saw, and a couple of occasions I was only a few feet away from these. One was a small object, one was a large object. And so there was no doubt in my mind that what we were looking at was not something that I considered to be extraterrestrial right from the word go. because it had been written up in the press, and I really wasn't interested. But when I saw it, it sort of changed my life. And so I've always, you have people who believe, people who disbelieve, and then people who know. The people who have been up close and seen it know. So I've always known what was going on. And to me, it was always to sort of get some justification. And so I started on this search of trying to find out what the answer was, who had the answer, tell other people about what had happened, why it was so important and stuff. And I just sort of ran into roadblocks. Like now we have the book, which I have to give great credit to Steve, because Steve is sort of a pusher and he never gave up. And
he never gives up.
And I just
I've known
going
him for years.
To the New York publisher. And I just sat back. And my first experience in publishing was trying to publish the manuscript of the this massive flap that I investigated for a year and a half back in the 70s. And I remember the local publisher in a city that I'm in, 700,000 people, it's a fairly big city, the big local publisher, I remember the rejection letter came back to me and said, you may believe in this kind of stuff, count me among the unbelievers. So I was always sort of put off by going first to the publisher, getting turned down, then going and investigating the Canadian government and finding out that in the early years they seemed to have a belief and seemed to try to do something and then just sort of gave up on it. And when that didn't work, then I came across this former president of Penn State University who was a friend of Eisenhower and a number of the presidents and very powerful guy who knew what was going on but sort of talked in rhymes and riddles to us. And we went after this guy for about 8 years, published that book, which only had 1,000 copies. It was an internal publication by MUFON. And it was sort of when I got to there, some of his files were supposed to be at the Truman Library. And I went to the Truman Library, and I can still remember to this day, and this is going back almost 10 years, I went there to look for Dr. Eric Walker's files from Penn State on because we knew he had a UFO file, and we figured it might be there. And I went there, and I remember saying, well, by the way, what kind of UFO files do you have on the president? And they basically said, well, we have a couple of pages, and they basically named off what they had. And I thought, well, this is very strange. I mean, to me, it was the most – it will be 500 years from now the most important subject that's ever come along, the most historic event. And I always knew that from the word go. So I was thinking, well, this is the most powerful guy in the world, and this is the most important subject. Why would the president not be involved in this? And Truman Library is only about 80 miles down the road from Eisenhower Library.
That's
so
right.
Then I went to the Eisenhower Library, and I've been there numerous times. I'm going there in a couple weeks again. But I went to the Eisenhower Library, and I remember them had 5 documents in 28 million pages. And that was at that point that I sort of said, something's wrong here. This guy, if he doesn't know what's going on, should know what's going on. He's the most powerful guy in the world, and this is the most important subject. And so I started on this trek of going to one presidential library after another, looking for the UFO document.
Have you concluded, Grant, that U.S. presidents knew about UFOs or were never told?
Actually, the more I go along, the more confused I get. I, for any president, I can give you 3 examples that show that the president knew and 3 that show that he doesn't know. I know, like, some of them, for example, I think when Steve writes up the book, like Steve is doing the vast majority of the writing, a lot of the book is going to deal with the Clintons because the Clintons were very interested in the phenomena and left an awful lot of documents and left the trails, and now we're going after the documents at the Clinton Library. And Clinton for sure didn't know. I mean, he even said in 2005 in answer to a question when he was asked about it, it had nothing to do with UFOs. And in Hong Kong, he said, I'm probably not the first president they've lied to or that they've tried or the bureaucrats have tried to wait out. I tried to find out about Roswell, and I'm almost embarrassed to say that, but I was not able to find out anything. And I think it's a very well-known fact. And I think if Bill Clinton was actually interviewed, he would state quite clearly, yes, he was very interested in the phenomena, fascinated, he told one person, and tried to get the answer, couldn't get the answer. And I think some of my dealings with Edgar Mitchell sort of led me to that. When Edgar Mitchell said that his internal sources said that really no president after Kennedy had been given the inside track. And I know it's hard to believe that the president may not know what's going on, but in some cases, like with Democrats, it did appear to be true. Like, especially Bill Clinton, it appeared that President Clinton tried to get there and was not able to get the answer. But it's hard to say. There's always indications, for example, just to give you another short example, Charles Huffer, who was...
Well, hold that, Grant, right okay. there. We're going to take this quick break. We'll be back with you and Stephen Bassett. You're both with us for a couple hours tonight with phone calls next hour as well. Stephen Bassett, Grant Cameron, as they try to find out about disclosure. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We're with Canadian researcher Grant Cameron and Steve Bassett. Stephen, what drives you? I've known you now for close to 12 years. You don't stop. You've been at this every day of your life. How come?
Well, first of all, it's not simply me. I'm not on some lone quest. There has been building since 1991 what we call the disclosure movement, which is an advocacy activist movement to resolve the UFO question politically, which is to say change the government's policy. There are a lot of people out there, a lot of organizations, activists, researchers like Grant, and others who were involved in this in various ways. So I'm part of a much larger process, and obviously it's a lot easier to pursue these things if you are part of a larger process. And believe me, there are people that I deal with that have been at this for 25 years, 30 years.
Oh, Stan Friedman, for example.
Well, Friedman's a researcher, and some of the activists go back, way back. But the point is that I came in at a relatively late 1996, and the issue was starting to come together. And I entered just at a time when your illustrious predecessor, Art Bell, made a decision that he wasn't particularly comfortable with, but I think he knew it was the right thing to do, which is to start taking on the political side of this on his show. Even though it wasn't the most charismatic and, you know, entertaining stuff, perhaps, because, you know, he did some great phenomenology and all that, but the politics may have seemed a little dry, but for the people, it represented a real possibility to get to the bottom of this. And so the Art Bell Show became a center for getting the information out to develop political movement to a larger audience. And I got involved in that very early. I figured out pretty soon that this was the most important issue in history, that it was near the end, that it was near resolution of what would be the most profound event in human history, disclosure with a capital D, the acknowledgement event, that it had enormous implications for the nation, the world, that the country in general, which I was fully aware of long before I ever got into the UFO ET issue, was in serious trouble on many levels, which I thought was, you know, not good, because I sort of liked my country. I was born into a Navy family, patriotic, all that. Mm-hmm. We seem to have quite a nation here, not perfect, but getting better all the time. And then it just sort of took a wrong turn, went off into the Thule. So all these implications were there. And so the deeper I got into it, the more important it seemed to me. And so, and then once you get down that road pretty far, you just don't go back. You just can't imagine walking away from something of this magnitude with potential to effectuate change and possibly being involved in that process of change later on to, say, do something of a more mundane nature. So I'm just in it. I entered it late in life. So frankly, if I wanted to turn back, George, I'm afraid it's not an option.
Grant Cameron, how about you? What pushes you?
To me, it's the mystery. It's having seen something up close a number of times, and wanting to sort of resolve it, you try to justify it to other people, you know, because I spent my whole life, and most people, you know, they'll listen to the story, but they really couldn't care less. And to me, it's the game. It's going to the – that's how I spend my holidays. I go to archives, and it's trying to figure it out. And it's like the thrill of, like, for example, getting Dick Cheney on the phone, where you pop the question to him, and he actually answers the question, and you're just flying high for days. That's what it is to me. It's just – to me, it's a game. It's something I intend to win. And, you know, if I was on the other side, I might be playing against it. But it's just a thrill to do, and it's a big challenge, and I think it's a very important subject. So I'm like Steve. Basically it's all I do is just play the game and try to move the ball down the field, and, you know, hopefully we're there when it crosses the goal line.
Okay, I'm going to give you the various presidents, Grant, and very quickly just highlight for us what the involvement you think they might have had in this field. You ready?
Yeah.
Harry Truman, first of all.
Well, let's go one back before that, because I'm about to do an interview in Ohio with an 83-year-old woman and her sister, who both tell the story that their father, who's a minister in Ohio, was taken by the longest taken below the Capitol in Washington, D.C. The date they're giving me is 1935, and were shown bodies on a craft below the Capitol. And this very impressive story, these old ladies telling this story, and told the story by their father in 1948. So I think Roosevelt knew some. There was a crash in 42, which I'm pretty sure he knew about. There was the overflight in Los Angeles that we have documents. Mm-hmm. So I think Roosevelt had some knowledge, had to have had some knowledge if his Secretary of State was running around showing people bodies.
Interesting.
Oh, God, that means another chapter.
Here we go. That's right. You better at it. Harry Truman.
Harry Truman is the guy who probably had the most control. He's the guy that brought in all the national security state and the CIA and sort of built the intelligence network and tried to get control of the thing. Was involved with the Roswell thing and sort of was able to sort of wrap it up and get it sort of under control and keep the secret, and yet had some control. I think he was one of the presidents that actually did have some control over who was running it and sat on top of the thing.
Dwight Eisenhower.
Eisenhower, very secretive type guy. A lot of stories. There's a story of 54 where he goes to Palm Springs, confirmed the story that he did go. He did disappear. Now there's a story that one of the guys is going to speak at Steve's conference, 1955, Holloman Air Force Base. At first, I doubted because the Truman or the Eisenhower archivist who I deal with told me he'd never been there. But there's a lot of evidence coming out, so I'm going to back to the library in a couple weeks to check that out. And of course, you've got the story about the film. And
yeah.
If it comes to disclosure of this, and I was talking to Steve about this the other night, if any of what this guy is saying is true. I mean, this thing could unravel very, very fast.
Huge. John F. Kennedy.
Kennedy, I think Kennedy had, I sort of believe he had less impact than a lot of presidents, because he actually didn't even serve one term. But Tim Good is telling a very interesting story that he's told a number of times about Kennedy's Air Force One pilot telling the story that he did go to see the bodies. And Tim Good's a pretty reliable guy, and I think I believe the story. So he did have some major involvement.
Lyndon Johnson, probably not much, I would assume.
Lyndon Johnson, I did a story. I spent a lot of time at the Johnson Library. The Keksberg crash, when the Keksberg crashed in December of 1965, the morning after, that's what I do. I go to the library and I check the where the president was, where his top generals were, and all this sort of stuff. The morning after the Keksberg crash, all the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he was at his ranch in Texas. All the Joint Chiefs of Staff flew in. The head of NASA flew in. All the right people flew in. Now they had the war in Vietnam going on, and the meetings are written up as Vietnam War meetings. But all the people appeared, and there is a one very interesting story that Blue Book records on the Keksberg crash, which there are, describe a call coming from they used the code name, and I can't remember what the code name was, but when we tracked the whole code name down, it was the presidential bunker at Mount Weather outside of Washington, D.C., where they take the president if there's a nuclear attack. And there was a message came out of there, and we tracked the guy. We know who the guy was that sent the message, and basically talking about material that was being recovered in Michigan. So as the Keksberg crash is taking place and all this military chatter is going on, the presidential bunker is involved. And Johnson was the type of guy, very secretive, and type of guy who was a very powerful guy, wanted to be on top of it. I would not be surprised if he knew an awful lot more than we know right now.
Richard Nixon.
Nixon, I've talked to a number of people, including his second wife, who maintains up and down that Jackie Gleason came home one night and said that he had been with the president and that the president had taken him to an Air Force base in Florida and shown him bodies. And when I checked the story, we have two other people telling the same story that Gleason had told them the story. And when we go and check the presidential record, we find out that the Air Force Base where they're claiming the bodies were, where Gleason was taken, was the place that when Nixon went to the Southern White House in Florida, he stopped at this base every single time. He would land at the base, and they would take the helicopter.
That is fascinating. Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter is the guy who's now sort of running for cover, denying by a lot of material. No doubt that Jimmy Carter shook every tree he could. He was the guy who had a UFO sighting in 1969 and was determined he was going to get to the bottom of the thing and sent out a bunch of different people, press secretaries, his science advisor, a whole group of people to find out what was going on. And sort of hit a bunch of brick walls, really wasn't trusted by the military. He had cut the CIA budget and done a bunch of things that made him very unpopular, was sort of like Bill Clinton sort of cut out, but did actually achieve quite a bit. The vast majority of the UFO documents we have from the FBI, from the CIA, from Navy, from a number of the different departments all came under the Jimmy Carter administration through the Free Information Act, and I think a lot of that had to do with Jimmy Carter opening the door to get this stuff out.
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan was the guy who, as Colin Powell, who was his security advisor, was talking about aliens all the time in meetings, and Colin Powell, one of his jobs, he's openly stated this to a presidential historian, was to keep the little green men speeches out of the little green men references out of speeches, and to whenever he would start talking about it at meetings to try to get him off the topic. He was fascinated with a subject that is quite well known and had two UFO sightings and is famously known to have told Steven Spielberg when he was being shown the movie E.T. the Extraterrestrial in 1982, leaned over to Steven Spielberg and said, I bet you there aren't six people in this whole room who know how true this whole story is. And to add to that, which maybe even Steve doesn't know, I was at the X conference last year. I had a producer, a film producer, come up to me and said she had a top film producer in Hollywood who was telling the same story. And so we went through the whole thing. She took the story back and showed the story off my website, and the guy said, yes, Steven Spielberg told him the same story as well.
Amazing. Gerald Ford, right after Nixon, he wasn't there long. Anything there?
Ford was involved because there was a big flap of UFOs while he was a congressman in Michigan, and Jalen Hynek, the famous researcher, was in his congressional district. And so he made a number of different efforts when he was a congressman to try to get a congressional hearing going, was very, very outspoken, saying that it wasn't good enough just to say we don't know. And when he got into the White House, just suddenly said nothing and has written a letter that George Filer, who has Filer's files, got from him that said, I tried as congressman, as vice president, and as president to get information on UFOs, and I was always told by officials there was nothing to it.
We've talked about Clinton. How about the two George Bushes?
George Bushes, as I was telling you, I started the story before. Charles Huffer, who was an Arkansas researcher, actually made presidential UFO searching very famous because he was a guy who lived in Arkansas and had a lot of contact with both the Bushes, because when Bushes were in Washington, when they would fly back just before elections, they would fly through Arkansas and land at Fayetteville, Arkansas. And Huffer was always waiting for them. Now, Huffer has just died in the last couple of months, but he managed to get Bush Sr. and Bush Jr. on tape. And the more famous one is with Bush Sr., where he said, are you going to tell us what's going on with the UFO thing? And George Bush Sr. said, yeah, if I can find out what it is. And Huffer yelled back, come on, you were CIA man, you know what's going on. And George Bush responded, yeah, I know some, yes, I know a lot. And this is on tape. And then when he confronted Bush Jr. coming back, heading back for one election, he stopped there and he asked him, and that's when he said, yes, I'll give you the UFO answer. And he said, this man beside me, and he referred to Dick Cheney, he was Secretary of Defense. He knows what's going on. It'll be the first thing he does when he gets in the White House. And, of course, when nothing happened in the 2004 election, Huffer confronted him coming through Arkansas again, going back the night before the election. And he said, do you remember my promise about the UFOs? And Bush said, yes, yes, I'll do it. And, of course, didn't do anything.
Stephen Bassett, what will history say about Barack Obama?
I believe that Barack Obama is going to be the disclosure president. Now, this, of course, is an assessment of mine based upon a whole bunch of stuff that we could spend 3 hours going into. But he is the right guy at the right time. The music has stopped, and he got the chair. That's my view. It's not sure yet whether we'll be able to get a chapter on Barack in the book. I think it's possible. The manuscript delivery date is the middle of May. The book is slated to come out in the fall. But I should mention that the publisher has been extremely cooperative regarding this book, which, by the way, I think, you know, I think your listeners want me to know that there have been a number of working titles been kicking around. Titling a book is a dynamic process between the authors and the agent and the editor and the publisher and the sales team and all that. Currently, the working title is U.S. Presidents and UFOs, The Untold Story. But there have been others. U.S. Presidents and UFOs, Exopolitics in the White House, and U.S. Presidents and Exopolitics, UFOs over the White House. But currently the working title is U.S. Presidents and UFOs, The Untold Story. And it is. It's not a disclosure treatise. It's not an advocacy work. It is the best accounting, and it's the only book ever to approach a subject from the standpoint of U.S. presidents, focusing on that. And, of course, it is the culmination of over 11 years of work by Grant. So it's unique, it's special in a lot of ways. And because of the timing, this book clearly has the potential to impact the disclosure process. And I will go into that more a little bit later. But the publisher has been incredibly cooperative about this book. In other words, they get it. Peter Mayer is a legend. He's a maverick. He is, in 2007, he received an award for being the leading, independent publisher in the country. I believe it was called the New York Center for Independent Publishers Publishing's Poor Richard Award for outstanding contributions as an independent publisher. He is a legend in the field. They first of all agreed to put the book out this year, which was significant in and of itself because publishers rarely work that quickly. And more importantly, they indicated that if disclosure were to take place, meaning formal acknowledgement of ET presence by the U.S. government or another government, that the book would be put on a fast track and put out, who knows, 30, 40 days. And thirdly, they approved a full pre-publication promotional effort on the part of myself and Grant. This isn't always possible with a book. And some books, you just can't do it. But in this case, it was important. And what that means is that starting right now, a PRG in particular, because Grant's going to be doing heavy research, so I'm going to carry that load. PRG is going to heavily promote this book from this point forward right up to the day that it is released. And there are two reasons for that. One, for this book to have the impact that it should have, it needs to have, and you need to get that message through to the powers that be, it needs to get out there, it needs to be received, it needs to be reviewed, and if we can get some help from perhaps your listeners, we need to get this book on the bestseller list. In fact, I know how the numbers that are involved there, and getting on the bestseller list is not as hard as you think nationwide, and even getting to the top of the list is not impossible. And so we're going to do everything we can to not only pre-sell this book, but to get people aware of its importance and what have you so that this book gets up there and makes a mark. Not because we want to make lots of money, not because we have big egos, I can assure you. It is because that is how you get their attention. And so we're going to be pre-publishing this book. But there is a second very important reason, and that's this. The two key chapters in this book are the Clinton and the Carter chapters.
Mm-hmm.
There's material in those chapters pertaining to a lot of fairly important people. And naturally, we want to make sure that the material in this book is as accurate as possible. Sure. And so Grant and I are going to make every effort to interview these individuals to make sure that we get their story, too, and that what we're going to be writing is correct. And these individuals are fairly significant people. In the Carter administration, we naturally are going to try to interview Jimmy Carter, Marcia Smith, President H.W. Bush, and some of the SRI personnel. And after the break, I'll tell you some of the people we're going to interview regarding the Clinton administration.
Okay, we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.